It is Tuesday, June 11th, 2024, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Matthew Moore. Today, the Arkansas Economic Development Commission is working with small businesses across the state to provide matching grants to improve innovation research.
So as a business, if you have applied for a federal SBIR grant, then the state, if you apply, it can match the SBIR grant one or two.
Plus, a semester-long project to help area schools identify both challenges and solutions to those challenges.
And we bring in, you know, our team supports them. Then we bring in partners that are kind of experienced in kind of design within schools, and then also, you know, specialized partners.
And our militant grammarian is back with another spelling test.
Probably the reason that you misspelled it is that you mispronounce it, as I do.
Oof, I don't do so well. Before that, we catch up on the news.
The Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society's 26th season of the Summer Jazz Concert Series presents the Ted Ludwig Quartet, featuring Pat Bianchi, Paul Carr, and Stephen Pruitt, Saturday, June 15th at 7:30 p.m. at Walton Arts Center. Tickets and information available at digjazz.com/events.
This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, June 11th, 2024. I'm Matthew Moore. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Later today, our militant grammarian continues to test us with some of the hardest words in the English language to spell. Let's see if you can do any better than Kyle Kellums. But first, the Arkansas Economic Development Commission has a pretty straightforward goal: grow economic opportunities for all Arkansans. Esperanza Masana Crane serves as the Director of Small Business and Entrepreneurship Development for AEDC. She says there are three different ways they create economic opportunity.
Job creation, when we attract companies into the state, expansion of jobs whenever we work with companies and help them expand. And then the third piece, which is the small business and entrepreneurship development, which is helping our small business and entrepreneurship base start, grow, and flourish in the state.
One way to help small businesses start, grow, and flourish is through awarding grants. Ayush Thakur is the CEO and co-founder of Freight Relay, a logistics technology company based in Bentonville. He says in Arkansas, if a company receives the Small Business Innovation Research Grant on a federal level,
then they are eligible to apply for a supplemental funding from the state of Arkansas.
Thakur's business is working to use technology to optimize logistics and freight transportation. The company started in Memphis, and he says being there seemed like the right place to be because of the mix of intermodal transportation that exists there. For example, FedEx is based in Memphis, and they use planes, trains, and trucks to move items. Other major train freight companies like BNSF and Norfolk Southern have rail yards in Memphis, too.
That's kind of where we started to look at, okay, can we compete with rail? And we realized very quickly, no, we can't compete with rail. So we said, okay, let's pack up and see where we can go. And at that time, there was another program that was happening here in Arkansas.
Thakur says AEDC has been incredibly helpful since making the move across the Mississippi River.
The moment we moved to Arkansas, AEDC has been around to support us. We moved here in 2020, and you know, we were very happy that we moved here in January. Everything was going
smoothly. Oh, yeah.
Everything was going smoothly. And then in April, COVID hit. And we were like, oh, crap, what do we do?
Well, they ended up joining Fuel Accelerator, a 10-week program run by Startup Junkie that matches tech startups with the needed partners to grow their business.
And that's where we were a nice fit because Arkansas has so much trucking.
Crane with AEDC says that the federally funded Small Business Innovation Research Grants are very competitive, and they want to incentivize businesses who are receiving these grants to grow here in Arkansas.
And so the program was created to leverage federal SBIR grants to stimulate innovation in the state and ultimately create high-paying jobs. The state of Arkansas provides matching grants to these federal grants. So as a business, if you have applied for a federal SBIR grant, then the state, if you apply, it can match the SBIR grant one or two.
The SBIR grants are awarded in two phases. Phase one establishes the technical merit, feasibility, and commercial potential of a product or business. Those are for 6 months. Phase two is a continuation of that research and is awarded for 2 years. In Arkansas, the AEDC will match Phase 1 grants up to $50,000 and Phase 2 grants up to $100,000. One of the benefits to being a company focusing on optimizing logistics and long-haul trucking in Northwest Arkansas is the proximity to huge companies involved in the business. Whether it's trucking companies like J.B. Hunt and ArcBest or companies who just move a lot of products like Tyson or Walmart, Thakor says his company is in a good location, not just because they are giant companies, but because they are always forward-looking.
They are innovative in the aspect that, of course, they're slow to change just because of the size of the, you know, enormous size of their operations, but they are always on the lookout for new technologies.
Crane says another way small businesses can benefit from services provided by AEDC is to enroll in part of their annual matchmaking events,
which is where we bring buyers from the state, local, federal government, and private sector. And so these businesses have the opportunity to have 15-minute meetings with these buyers.
These buyers range from everything to businesses looking to hire catering companies to the state of Arkansas looking to, well, hire catering companies. Crane says public utilities like Central Arkansas Water, government agencies like the Little Rock Air Force Base, and multinational corporations like Tyson Foods are at these events looking for Arkansas-owned companies to do business with.
Just to plug in for the certification that we offer, the state of Arkansas awards contracts. If you have anything up to $20,000, you can purchase directly with any vendor. But anything that is more than $20,000 for the state of Arkansas, you have to require 3 quotes. But if you're certified, if you're a certified business owner, you can go directly with a certified business owner to do the transaction with them up to $40,000. So for example, if I am a minority and woman-owned legal firm and you are needing legal services, Department of Health is needing some legal services of or a project for $35,000, they can go directly with me. So all those contracts are brought to the table at the matchmaking event or opportunities like that to find vendors that happen to be minority and or women owned or service disabled veteran, which falls under the category of minority.
Thakor says the SBIR funding that their company was awarded by the state will go towards non-technical things that they need to pay for.
Like, you know, if you need to do bookkeeping for the company, if you need to create some flyers, if you need to do, you know, anything that is non, if you're not developing software, it's not that, then you can't usually pay with the SBIR dollars. And that's where the supplemental grant from the state allows us to supplement the administrative costs that we have, the accounting costs, things like that, that are needed for us to be able to run the company while we are able to use our developers, data scientists to build the product that we need.
Right. So the NSF money is obviously more geared towards the research and the science, hence NSF. And this SBIR matching grant is more based towards the infrastructure of making sure the company can stay afloat because you've got a bookkeeper and you've got someone like Jordan who can make sure you're on time.
Exactly. That's, I think, even more critical than our technical people because, you know, we are just in our own bubble, you know, and kind of zoned in. And we need to run payroll every twice a month. We need to make sure the books are balanced twice a month at least. And then, you know, send out, respond to people's requests and have meetings, presentations, do all the other things that we need to do.
There are two primary ways startups get funded, venture capital and non-diluted funding. If you've ever seen an episode of Shark Tank, you might be familiar with the idea of diluted funding. Say someone has a business that is valued at $1 million. An investor might offer to give the company another $1 million, but he wants to be a part owner of that company if he gives that much money. Non-diluted funding, like grants, offer money to the company without diluting the ownership share. Thakor says non-diluted funding is a better fit for his company for a few reasons.
As you are aware, we are not California or New York or Boston in Arkansas. It's a different state. There's less funding opportunities available through venture capital here, and not all companies align with that. We are a very deep tech company where, you know, we need to do a lot of study and research before we can have a product that actually works.
Lucky for him, he has found great success at the federal and state level to acquire that kind of funding until their product is ready to roll out. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Matthew Moore. In today's second half hour, Forward Arkansas is working with public schools in Northwest Arkansas to solve educational problems.
They look at structures, practice, and culture. So structures, things like the schedule in the school day, what the roles of teachers are, things like that.
The inaugural Learner Collective is finished. We find out what's next later on this edition of Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Department of Transportation will be holding a meeting on Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. in Siloam Springs to discuss the conversion of U.S. Highway 412 into an interstate. The meeting will be in conjunction with the Oklahoma Department of Transportation and will be held at Simmons Great Hall at John Brown University. This will be the third in-person meeting regarding the plan to convert the highway into an interstate. There will be no formal presentation at this meeting, but a chance to view exhibits, ask questions to officials from the departments of transportation, and provide comment. If the plan goes through, the road will include around 190 miles that will connect Interstate 35 in Oklahoma to Interstate 49 in Arkansas. The funding for this project will come from federal funding via the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Arkansas ranks near the bottom in the United States for overall child well-being, according to the latest Kids Count data book from the Annie E. Casey Foundation. The annual report looks at metrics concerning kids' health, economic prospects, and overall wellness across the country. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth spoke with Annie E. Casey Chief Executive Officer Lisa Hamilton about the new report yesterday.
In the 35th Kids Count data book from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, Arkansas fell 2 points in the rankings from 43rd to 45th in overall child well-being. And that score is based on an amalgamation of several indicators from four main categories: economic well-being, education, health, and family and community. Here's the foundation's president and CEO, Lisa Hamilton.
In this year's data book, we compare child well-being from the years roughly 2019 to 2022. And over that time, we saw that 5 of the 16 indicators we track saw improvement, 4 stayed the same, and 6 went in the wrong direction.
And she says the report showed significant progress when it comes to metrics like family and community, with declines in teenage birth rates and the total number of kids living in high poverty across the U.S. She says education, however, had the most alarming results to come out of this year's report.
For example, 8th grade math proficiency has dropped. In 2022, only 26% of 8th graders were proficient in math. That's worse than before the pandemic, where the rate was 33%. And then 4th grade proficiency in reading was at 32%. So we are not ensuring that our young people have the basic literacy and numeracy skills they're going to need to be competitive in the global marketplace.
Hamilton says chronic absenteeism, or when kids miss 10 or more days of school, has been getting worse since the COVID-19 pandemic.
30% of all students were chronically absent in the 2021 to 22 school year. That's almost double the pre-pandemic rates. And while we are certainly worried about those young people who are missing school, it has a ripple effect on other students who are showing up every day. So if you can imagine teachers having to go back and cover material that other students missed, it slows down everyone in the class. There are actually lots of reasons behind chronic absence, but there are also lots of mental health issues that kids are dealing with. There's a child care crisis. So really, it's a widespread problem that needs to be addressed.
Arkansas is close to that national trend, with 26% of students chronically absent in 2022. The state ranked 36th overall in education. And one other factor where the data book shows problems for kids in Arkansas is in health. 2022 was one of the deadliest years for children in the state, with 44 deaths per 100,000 kids, almost 50% higher than the national average. And the state was also ranked low in economic well-being, at 46th in the nation. And Hamilton says she believes one of the major problems plaguing Arkansas is widespread childhood poverty.
The percentage of children in poverty is a key metric, and Arkansas has more than the national average in terms of kids in poverty. It's got 22% of kids in poverty compared to 16% overall in the country. And that has ripple effects on everything from their access to health care, their access to behavioral health, their access to nutrition. All of those factors certainly have ripple effects.
And as far as solutions go, Hamilton says she believes legislators and policymakers can help improve some of these outcomes through expanding tax credits for families, access to health insurance, and investment in education.
There are billions of dollars still unspent of pandemic-era school funding. $40 billion is still on the table, and it needs to be allocated by September 30th. So there are resources available for schools to do something. And the kinds of things they can do are to provide intensive tutoring that can help students catch up on their lost learning. They can also invest more in community schools. These are sort of one-stop shops that provide services and supports for kids and families. They might be educational services like tutoring, but they can also help provide things like access to behavioral health services or connect them to nutritional aid. The stakes couldn't be higher. There's, according to estimates, $31 trillion of U.S. economic activity that hinges on us helping kids make up this pandemic era learning loss.
The full 2024 Kids Count report and recommendations from the Annie E. Casey Foundation is available online at aecf.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
Daniel Carruth produces his stories inside the Karen Taha News Studio.
This is Ozarks at Large. Some students are getting a summer break from school, but many teachers and educators are already thinking about and preparing for the next semester and the next school year. Last month, Forward Arkansas hosted teams of teachers and their principals for the inaugural Celebration of Learning. The gathering was the culmination of a five-month-long effort to identify challenges for individual schools in Benton and Washington counties and to begin working toward solutions for those challenges. Before the event began on Mount Sequoia, I talked with Ben Cotillo, the executive director of Forward Arkansas, about the motivations behind the nonprofit's first Learner Collective. He says Forward Arkansas was developed in 2015, co-founded by the Walton Family Foundation and the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation as an independent educational organization.
Focused on statewide systemic improvement of education and better outcomes for every student in the state. And so our mission, or we're focused on ensuring every Arkansas student has access to and is prepared for opportunities in career and life. So we, Forward works, we say that we work at the intersection of policy and practice. So we work across the state, like the Learner Collective, in communities, with communities, schools and districts, educators, families, to provide support and resources based, you know, to help them improve education for students in those communities based on the needs that we have. And then we take all that we learn about those needs, and we use that to inform and influence statewide policy and strategy.
So behind you and me, inside Bailey Hall, it looks like there are teachers, educators from several school districts in Northwest Arkansas. They're part of the first half of 2024 cohort?
Yes, they are. We've got 10 teams, each team consisting of the principal and multiple teachers from 10 different schools throughout Northwest Arkansas. And so they are part of this inaugural cohort first program within the Learner Collective.
So what were they doing since January?
Yeah, kicked off in January. And basically each team, we create kind of a process and structure, and also we're creating space for them to come together as a team and come together with other schools and school teams in their region. And what they've done, they identified a problem of practice, basically a challenge that they and their students are facing or that they want to improve upon within their school. And we support them to help identify that, but they identify that themselves. And then since January, they've been working on basically developing kind of pilot solutions to address that challenge. And that could be in literacy, community partnerships, really a kind of a student-centered focus. But again, they're driving that. And so we provide support and space for them to more deeply understand that challenge and then develop this pilot solution. And then over the course of the last 4 months, they've implemented that and tested that solution and, reflect and evaluate and iterate on it as well.
All right, you use literacy as an example. Let's just extend that. Let's say one of the teams here is finding a challenge with literacy. How do you go about trying to find a solution? Were these perhaps solutions that they had thought about before and hadn't had resources and time to try to implement?
Yeah, I mean, every team comes in with, thoughts and ideas and emotions about that challenge and potentially how they could improve within their school. But so they come in with those ideas, but I think part of the process is as they're reflecting and digging into it as a team, they start to better understand it. And then we work with them really kind of, and we bring in, our team supports them. Then we bring in partners that are kind of experienced in kind of design within schools. And then also, specialized partners in literacy or certain areas. But so they look at structures, practice, and culture. So structures, things like the schedule in the school day, what the roles of teachers are, things like that. They also look at practice, so how that instruction is being delivered and what needs to improve upon there. And then culture, so how they're building a culture among their team and with their students, let's say, around literacy. And so those are all the kind of levers that we support them to pull, and that looks different in each school based on their needs and context.
So it's a chance to look at things that maybe you haven't, that have been institutional,
yeah,
whether on purpose or just through time. When you're talking about structure of the day, things that sometimes you just take for granted, well, it's that way because it's that way.
That's exactly right. And so you continue to do it that way, and you may not have the time or space to think about how to do it differently, or you may not know that it can be done differently. So part of the purpose of this is to, again, allow these teams to kind of think and reflect on that, but also bring in those partners that do have experience in those areas, have seen other models, other approaches to, let's say, a school schedule, and then they can provide ideas and support these teams to create a structure or a schedule, in this example, that fits with their needs.
Resources, money, expertise, outside expertise is always big. I know for educators, principals and teachers, time is too. You can have all these thoughts and I'd love to think about how to deal with this, but your day's full.
Yeah.
Is this cohort have a chance to have some time to pull back and study?
That's one of the biggest purposes of this is to create, and I think that's one of the biggest kind of almost areas of value for them. And I think they would say that, that's not just me, but the point is to create that space for them. But we also, and so there have been multiple in-person events like this. And then, they get support and coaching in between, kind of individually from the partner coaches on our team and our partner's team. So we're trying to create that space for them to do this. But we also acknowledge how much they have going on in their buildings and in their lives. And so finding that space is hard. So that's part of why we provided the kind of small grants, $5,000 each to each team, to help them cover the costs of that, support their efforts through this program.
Today they share what they've done over the last few months?
Yeah, this is, you know, it's a celebration. So every team has been highly engaged. They have worked really hard. And so this is an opportunity for them to present to other teams and to, you know, other folks that are coming to see this, all the work that they've done and kind of the results of some of that work. And again, a big part of this is about bringing these teams together. Every team has different needs, different context in their schools and their communities, but a lot of the challenges are similar too. So it's important for them, and they don't often get the opportunity to share and collaborate with other teams and learn from other other educators.
No school is one size fit all. Yeah. In Northwest Arkansas, you have some of the biggest school districts in the state. Then you got, you know, ones that are not as big, maybe Pea Ridge or Prairie Grove. So it's going to be a different sort of situation and maybe different challenges.
Exactly right. You know, some of the challenges are the same. Some of the challenges are very different based on size, level of resources, student population, educator, you know, all of those things. So it's really this program is really designed to not be one size fits all and to take that into account. So there are some common things, like I was talking about before, kind of the types of support that they're getting. But what is different about this compared to, I think, maybe lots of professional development that schools or educators get is that it is really meant to be tailored to their needs and context.
Is there help for if there is some sort of institutional thing that you want to change or look at changing? You know, that can be tough.
Yeah.
You may buy into the idea you've come up with, but you've got to get all your colleagues on board too.
Yeah. And so through this first phase, they talk about that and think about how, you know, how they might scale, you know, what they're working on here to, you know, to the full building or to other teachers. And so they're kind of planning for that. And we provide support around that, how to think about doing that and kind of change management. Also, and we can get into this too, but, you know, there's a next phase of this where a subset of schools will, some schools will be able to kind of continue in a similar way to the work that they've done in this first phase, continue to expand and refine the work that they've done. And then a subset of schools will have the opportunity to go deeper and get support for, you know, an extended period of time, 2 years, to really think about how are they taking kind of the concepts and things they've been working on here, expanding that to their entire school and get support to do that, including things like, you know, change management, bringing on other teachers and educators, parents, families, things like that.
And that subset will come out of the group that's here today?
Yes, yes. So this is the first phase. And so so these 10 teams will have an opportunity to apply for that or apply to these two different pathways. And then all of those teams, you know, will emerge from this cohort that we have today.
So 2 years from now, you'll have some tracking. Did this work?
Yeah.
Or how well did it work?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so we'll plan on tracking that, evaluating that. Part of what they, you know, part of what they'll be doing here and what they've done even in this first phase is evaluating how well what they're doing is working so that they can refine and iterate and continuously improve upon it. But that'll be a big part of the next phase too. And we'll be, you know, working with them or supporting them on that too. And then, yeah, the hope and plan is that, you know, as they start to expand this work within their school, we're going to see some real, you know, real impact and change. And I think even from the work they're doing here.
Is there a way for parents or those of us who don't even have, you know, a direct connection to a school to follow what's happening?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're Ford, Arkansas, we communicate about this work, and that's part of what we do as an organization. We're, you know, part of what we do is elevate stories, share what's happening in the state of Arkansas around education, and help inform folks about, you know, what is happening both at the policy level and in communities. So, you know, one opportunity would be to, you know, go to Ford's website, sign up for our newsletter or our social media, and we're sharing, telling these stories and sharing about what's happening here all the time. And the hope is, you know, this is our inaugural launch. The hope is to expand this, continue and expand this even in Northwest Arkansas, but also throughout the state.
Thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Ben Cotillo is the executive director of Forward Arkansas. We spoke last month as the inaugural Celebration of Learning was beginning on Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville. This is Ozarks at Large.
Instrumentation in the past century of recorded music has been dominated by guitars, drums, horns, and more recently, keyboards and synthesizers. But some instruments have left their unique mark on the recording industry, distinguishing songs from the rest of the pack, and in some cases, establishing inextricable connections between the ear and the mind. For example, what does this song remind you of? Palm trees swaying in the breeze, pristine waters, hula dancers, etc. That's all thanks to the Hawaiian steel guitar. You're listening to the Waikiki Hawaiian Orchestra with My Hawaiian Evening Star, an Edison Blue Ambrell cylinder released in 1926. The easy, breezy sound translated into a big hit for Santo and Johnny Farina with their 1959 hit, Sleepwalk, probably one of the most popular instrumental pop songs of all time. You can see that video and learn more about the steel guitar in all its forms at soundbeat.org. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Library. I'm Brett Barry.
The Bentonville Film Festival kicks off today with events and showings scheduled all week. One of those films is Ben and Suzanne, a reunion in four parts, playing on Wednesday at 7 p.m. Anastasia Olowen is Suzanne in the film. We spoke over Zoom yesterday. She says coming to the Bentonville Film Festival has long been on her radar.
I'm a huge fan of Gina Davis, not just as an actor, but also as an activist and the work that she does with her foundation. I just think she's so cool. So Bentonville has been a festival that, and also this is, you know, a well-respected festival that seems like a lot of fun. And then when we found out we got in, I was like, oh, I'm definitely going.
Can you describe the film for our audience?
So Ben and Suzanne takes place in Sri Lanka. My character is there working at an NGO, and my long-distance boyfriend comes to visit me from the United States. We end up on a road trip throughout the countryside, and hijinks ensue.
From what I understand, this is your feature debut, right?
This is my first leading role on a feature film. Yeah, it's really exciting.
What has that meant to you to reach this level in your career?
It's really special that it's this film. I met our writer and director, Sean Sevenarotney, 10 years ago now. And we made the short film together with Sathya Sridharan, who plays Ben. The three of us made that short film that was always meant to be the prelude to this feature film. So this has been a real labor of love over the past 10 years. And I've met such beautiful, wonderful collaborators and friends with Sean and Sathya and so many other people that have come into our lives because of that short film. So this film, Ben and Suzanne mean a lot to me. And it's really, really cool to have this as such a wonderful debut for myself as well.
We're coming out of a strike where there were multiple levels of that happening. You know, you said 10 years. That feels like a really long time to kind of just work on stuff. And did it ever feel just like a trudge that like maybe it never will happen?
I told Sean that I will believe it when I'm on the airplane to Sri Lanka, that it's actually finally happening. There were so many, you know, for many summers, it was like this summer we're shooting the film, this summer we're shooting the film. And it just kept getting kicked down the road. And then finally last summer was our summer. Speaking of strikes, we got there, we shot for 2 days, and then we went on strike. So we had to wait for, I think, 6 days for the interim agreement to come through for us, which was kind of excruciating. But ultimately, you know, SAG cleared our film. We're so grateful for that. And it was hard because, you know, I'm a union gal through and through. We really believed in everything that we were striking against. So it was hard to be on this small indie project, this labor of love, and see it kind of being held up for things that it wasn't doing. But that being said, we finally got permission to start shooting again, got back in action, and finally got to make the film.
Was it complicated because you were like outside of the U.S. and you were in Sri Lanka? Did that make it more difficult?
I mean, we were in really close contact with our SAG rep the whole time. He was advocating for us as much as he could through that process. They did know that we were going to be there, and they knew there was the potential of us being on strike. So I think we had as much information as anybody could have at that time. But yeah, it was tough. It was also hard because I was seeing so many friends posting photos of being on the picket lines, and there was all this energy and excitement about it back in New York. And we were just kind of twiddling our thumbs at the Courtyard Marriott Hotel in Colombo.
Well, staying in Sri Lanka, what surprised you the most about shooting there?
Oh, gosh. Well, every film set is different. Like, you never really know what you're walking into with, you know, the dynamics between people. And there's always, you know, everything has its own complications or unknowns before you start. And we had myself, Sathya, the other actor, Sean, our director, and Molly Scotty, who's our DP. The four of us came over from the States, and everyone else was local to Sri Lanka. So our entire crew was Sri Lankan, and many of the other actors in the film are local Sri Lankans who had never acted before, which was very cool and very fun, and a challenge in and of itself, but kind of a wonderful one. So, but we didn't know what our crew was going to be like. We didn't know what the vibe was going to be. And it ended up being so great. Our crew was wonderful. They were so supportive, so smart, so talented. Really just, we felt very supported by them through the whole journey of making the film. So it ended up being a fantastic place to shoot a movie. And that was just something that I didn't know.
You talked about how you've been close to Sean, the writer and director of this film, for quite some time. What made you decide that you wanted to do this from the beginning? I mean, was there a certain spark you had with him as a writer? I mean, you talked about the short film version of this happened as well. Like, what was the initial peak of interest for you?
So I responded to a casting call on Backstage, and Sean had posted for the short film. And he had included, most of them are pretty kind of cut and dry. It's just, you know, the log line of the film and the character descriptions. This one, Sean had attached a lookbook. So he had collected this very beautiful PDF document, basically, of a bunch of images that were inspiring to him for the film and that he would be drawing from for our shoot. And I just found it really beautiful. And aesthetically, it really resonated with me. And so I wrote a very thoughtful response to his casting call. And then at our first audition, he and I just really clicked, and there was, you know, something energetically that we were like, yes, we're on the same page. We get each other. This is great.
Finally, Anastasia, you're here for the Bentonville Film Festival. You've talked about your love of Gina Davis. What's your favorite Gina Davis film?
Oh gosh. I mean, Thelma and Louise is iconic. Iconic. Yeah, that's way up there. But she just has like such a wonderful presence on screen. She's just so radiant as an actor, and just always so lovely. So I'm a fan.
Anastasia Olewen is an actress and one of the leads in Ben and Suzanne, a reunion in four parts. We spoke over Zoom yesterday. The film will be making its Arkansas premiere tomorrow at 7 p.m. at the Bentonville Film Festival. This is Ozarks at Large.
Do you have a story to tell? Come by the Listening Lab at KUAF and share it with us. All you have to do is go online to KUAFListeningLab.com and click on Share Your Story. And after submitting your request, we'll reach out to schedule a time for you to come by the KUAF studio. And you can listen to past conversations from the Listening Lab anytime at KUAFListeningLab.com.
FEMA is beginning door-to-door visits in Bentonville to collect data from residents about the May 26 tornadoes and storms that hit North Arkansas. FEMA representatives began the canvassing in Northwest Bentonville Friday and are working their way through the community. The information gathered will play a big part in the determination of federal assistance required for recovery efforts. The city of Bentonville is providing a disaster relief information page at bentonvilleAR.com. City of Rogers has also created such a page. It's available by following the links at rogersar.gov. SWEPCO's cleanup of debris from downed utility poles, wire, and transformers in Rogers is underway. Several crews are collecting that material. The work could take 3 weeks to complete, and a notice from SWEPCO indicates crews may need access to backyards and, in some cases, may need to drive equipment onto residential property to lift poles and transformers. SWEPCO, again, is asking residents to not try to move any of that equipment on their own. The calculation for the damage caused by the May 26 storms has yet to be fully determined, but the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, estimates there have already been at least 11 disasters in the United States this calendar year, with damage estimates at over $1 billion. NOAA also reports May 2024 was the 13th wettest May in the country's history. The forecast for tomorrow night in Springdale, clear with lows in the 60s. That's perfect for the next bike night in downtown Springdale. The events actually begin in the afternoon at 4:30 with the first race. Then races continue through 9. It's part of the Natural State Criterium Series. And a quick reminder, the deadline to apply for a single-parent scholarship of Northwest Arkansas Scholarship is almost here. Applications must be made by June 15th, that's Saturday. These are scholarships that would provide financial assistance for academic pursuits in the fall. Criteria for scholarships include the applicant must be a single parent, a resident of either Washington, Madison, Carroll, or Benton counties, be a legal resident of the United States, or a resident with DACA status, and have a high school diploma or GED. A full list of qualifications and much more information can be found at spsfnwa.org. This is Ozarks at Large. At the Carver Center for Public Radio with me is Catherine Sherrills. She is our militant grammarian. Hello, Catherine.
Hey. Kyle, we're picking up where we left off, much to your disagreement.
So spelling?
Yeah.
All right. Let me just say, I want to go back. So yes. There were 8 words last time.
Okay.
I got 4 right. No, there were 9 words. Math isn't my strong point either, apparently. There were 9 words. 4 I was correct.
Uh-huh.
3 I'm going to say I missed completely. And 2 of them I gave myself half credit for.
I think that's
so
fair.
I will say that I had 5 to the good, 3 to the bad.
Okay.
That's how we're scoring.
Without the help of spell check or a dictionary.
Thank you. Although you gave me some hints.
And I mean, after all, they're called the hardest words in the English language to
there
spell.
You go.
You've got your paper and pen handy, right?
I do, okay. Yes.
Kyle, I know you as well as many of our listeners remember Bob Douglas.
Oh, I remember him as a professor at the University of Arkansas, journalism professor.
He was a longtime editor of the Arkansas Gazette and later chairman of the journalism department. He and I shared a love of grammar and intolerance for misspelled words.
Okay.
He used to tell his journalism students never to stay at a motel whose sign misspelled accommodations. So let's see if you can spell accommodate.
There's a certain kind of word that has, when the C's and the M's, right? Like the C's could be doubled, the M's could be doubled, one could be doubled. Let's go. Accommodate. A-C-C-O-M-A-D-T-E.
Accommodate.
D-A-T-E.
You identified the problem, but you didn't get it right.
So it's 1 C, 2 M's?
Nope.
Oh, hell. What is it then?
2 C's, 2 M's. Words with double letters are already confusing. Knowing which letters you double in words like necessary, embarrassing, and millennium makes you glad they're spell checked.
Yes.
Accommodate is in particular can be tricky to remember since it follows a different rule from recommend, like the 1 C, 2 M's. Another word where the C's and M's can be sources of confusion. While recommend only has 1 C, accommodate has 2 of both consonants. And the word second O doesn't even make an O sound. Accommodate, day. Yeah. Right? That's how you pronounce it,
right? Oh, yeah, I was
it, right?
way off on that. Yeah. Okay.
So, Kyle, be honest now. Uh-huh. How do you pronounce the Oscar Mayer lunch meat often served on Wonder Bread with mayonnaise?
So I say bologna.
Mm-hmm. I do, too.
And I think it's what, bologna?
Bologna. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's and how you spell it.
Oh, I like how you just do that. And how you spell it.
Yeah.
All right. So for the sandwich meat, I'm going to go B-O-L-O-G-N-A.
That's correct.
Bingo.
There's a reason many meat packages spell it with O-N-E-Y.
Right.
The word bologna derives from Bologna, Italy,
right.
since a similar but fancier type of sausage comes from that city. For some reason, I think I would have spelled the next word correctly, even though I pronounce it incorrectly, as I will now.
Okay.
Kyle, can you spell orangutan?
O-R-A-N-G-U-T-A-N?
Very good.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
But how do you pronounce it?
I say orangutan, but I guess it's orangutan or...
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure that the...
Orangutan.
The correct spelling
yeah.
doesn't... lead into an N that sounds like it ought to have a G, but
yeah, and I think it's all. I think I'm glad you put those two words together because I think it's something like bologna. Like we all agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if you're the zookeeper at the San Diego Zoo, you say it. It's like Genghis Khan. Okay, that
yeah.
might be the right way, but we all know what we've been saying
yeah,
for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to pronounce the next word because I commonly mispronounce it. I mm-hmm. also usually have to look it up and rely on spell check. What adjective do you use to describe an impish child who, according to Webster, tends to cause annoyance, trouble, or minor injury, one who is irresponsibly playful?
Precocious?
Nope. Starts with miss.
This is going to be, this is even more humiliating because not only am I not going to be able to spell it, I don't even know this word. Miss.
It's mischievous.
Oh, a mischievous child. Mischievous.
Yeah.
M-I-S-C-H-E-V-I-O-U-S?
You've got the I out of place.
The hell you say. M-I-S-C-H-I-E-V-O-U-S?
Yeah.
I don't get credit
and
for that.
And probably the reason that you misspelled it is that you mispronounce it, as I do. I sometimes say mischievous.
Yeah.
It's not four syllables, it's three. Mischievous. Kyle, what's a fancier way of saying the governor's race?
Gubernatorial.
Mm-hmm. Now spell it.
G-U-B-E-R-N-A-T-I-O-R-A-L.
You almost had it in the last part of it, the notorial part. Say it to yourself as you're spelling it.
G-U-B-E-R-N-A-T-O-R-O-U. Right?
Mm-mm.
I don't know what.
Gubernatorial.
O-R-I-A-L? O-R?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, Kyle, here's a really tough one.
Oh, good.
As if you hadn't had
right.
one yet, right? Acquiesce. I wish this were a visual thing
oh
so
God.
Y'all could
acquiesce.
See, Kyle.
Acquiesce. Jeez. A-C... Q.
Well, you know what the next.
Well, yeah, sure, yeah. sure. U. A C Q U.
Qui S.
Yeah, that helps.
Q
U E. E. S. No, I don't know. So A C Q U. I E S.
Keep going.
I E.
E S. You got it till the end.
S.
No.
I E. So.
I-E-S is right.
Mm-hmm. Well, how can there be anything else? We've spelled it. What's left?
Well, we did with, you know, what looks. We looked at a lot of words like that.
Is there a silent vowel here at the end?
Yeah.
An E?
No.
I mean, it's silent, so it could be anything.
K-Z.
A U? A Y?
No.
An A?
All right. You've gotten to S, correct?
Yes.
What is the letter that often follows S that is silent, as in seen?
C?
Yeah.
That's just stupid.
And then you look at how you spell it. You got to add something on the end, all right? I mean.
Another silent, an E?
Yeah.
Oh, I like how you said it. Yeah. Like that would work. A-C-Q-U-I-E-S-C-E.
Correct.
Stupidest word ever.
God. Our final word
yes.
is definitely hard to spell.
Mm.
But I have to wonder how many times it comes up outside of an English class.
Yeah.
First, Kyle, what does onomatopoeia mean?
Oh, well, bang. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a word that sounds, it's pronounced and spelled like it sounds.
Mm-hmm. A word Bang. That mimics a sound.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now, how do you spell it?
Okay, you know there's a song that spells it.
Oh, really? Can you sing it?
No. I think it's They Might Be Giants that sings it. Oh. Onomatopoeia.
Onomatopoeia. Onomatopoeia.
Onomatopoeia?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's not what they sing, huh?
Well, it's not what I sing. Onomatopoeia.
Mm-hmm.
O-N-O-M-A-T-P-I-A.
No.
Yeah.
But you were good up to the T.
What? Well, you threw me off with that pronunciation, onomatopoeia.
That's how you pronounce it.
I don't think so.
Onomatopoeia. Onomatopoeia.
So, O-N-O-M-P. No, O-N-O-M-A.
And I thought you had the T, too.
I did have the T. Mm-hmm. And then, so you're saying I messed up after the T.
After that. Mm-hmm. Onomatopoeia.
You can say it a million times. It's not going to. What goes after the T? Oh?
Uh-huh,
no.
Yeah.
Oh?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then there's still five more letters.
Now, pia, which the pronunciation doesn't help you at all.
Well, P is next.
Yes, that's right. And what are the four letters that follow that?
Good gosh. IA ends it.
Yes.
Okay, so I've got
two letters between the P and the IA. Okay. O-N-O-M-A-T-O-P-O-E-I-A.
Mm. It's just a fun word that means a fun thing, so I'm going to let that one slide.
Between the eight vowels, mm-hmm. the fact that you only really need half the letters that are there to make the pia sound that it ends with, or the fact that replacing the T with an N and saying onomatopoeia, which rolls off the tongue slightly better, this tops the Reader's Digest list of English's hardest words to spell.
I love it. All right. Well, I got two out of whatever. Who's counting?
Okay. To finish, as Emeril often onomatopoeically does, bam!
Bam! Catherine Sherrill's our militant grammarian. Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, there have been scores of books written about Louis Armstrong, Count Basie, and Duke Ellington. Larry Tye wanted to write a book not just about the music from the three legends, but about how they changed America.
I think what they did is they took their music into the homes of black men, of white men who would never have allowed a black to cross their threshold, and yet who wooed their sweethearts with the music of the gravel-throated Louis Armstrong or Duke Ellington. I think that white women who would have probably walked to the other side of the street if a black man were coming towards them in the privacy of their own living rooms, kicked off their high heels and tapped their feet to the music of the swinging Basie band.
Larry Tye discusses his new book, The Jazz Men, How Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, and Count Basie Transformed America. That's on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville. Contributors to today's show included Daniel Carruth and our militant grammarian, Catherine Schultz. YK Karenbauer is our technical director here at KUAF.
Matthew produced today's show inside the Bruce and Ann Applegate News Studio 2 at the Carver Center for Public Radio.
Excited, we're going to have jazz galore on the show tomorrow.
Well, okay. That's what you thought, because that's what I told you. So we're going to still have a lot of jazz.
Yeah.
But my second conversation with Robert Ginsberg about the second summer jazz festival concert, that's going to now be heard next week.
Oh, okay.
So update. But we will hear Larry Tye talk about his brand new book, The Jazz Men, about Louis Armstrong, Count Basie, and Duke Ellington.
I aspire to like jazz. I wasn't introduced to a lot of jazz as a kid, and so I'm excited to hear this conversation.
All right. So you know that I asked if you could play the playlist I sent you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on a jazz playlist for you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited for that.
Yep. Okay. So yes, that's on tomorrow. There's more on tomorrow's show.
Yes, there is.
I promise you. And I'll start thinking about that here in about 45 seconds.
That's right.
All right. From the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Matthew Moore. Be well.
Support for KUAF comes from Essence Latin Dance, hosting their June Summer Social, June 15th, at World's Best Java and Pies in Springdale, starting with a cumbia class at 9 p.m. and the social from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. More information and registration at EssenceLatinDance.com.